Welcome to the Fall 2011 Retail Marketing Virtual Conference and Expo. I'm Joe Keenan, Senior Editor of Retail Online Integration. I'm pleased to welcome you to another great session, Social Marketing and Commerce Retail Case Studies. Joining me today are Anthony Madano, Vice President of Design and Marketing at Working Gear, a cross-channel retailer of workwear apparel, footwear, and accessories, and John Mulliken, Vice President of Strategic Initiatives at Wayfair.com, formerly CSN Stores, as well as general manager of its Joss & Main brand, a private flash sale site focused on high-quality goods for the home. Before we get started, let me point out a few tips on how to make the most of today's presentation. First, if you have any technical difficulties and are viewing this webcast as part of the live day, please visit us in the information booth to get live help. If you're viewing on demand, please shoot us an email at virtualshowinfo@napco.com and someone will get back to you promptly. Please make sure to turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can utilize all of the widgets and bells and whistles on this console. Speaking of bells and whistles, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn what all of the widgets on this console do and how you can customize your experience today. You can even tweet right from the console. Lastly, if you leave this session at any time or would like to view it again later, you can access the entire presentation from the auditorium in the Retail Marketing Virtual Show On Demand environment, which will be open for 3 months beginning on Thursday, September 29th. Without further ado, I'd like to introduce our first topic, integrating social media with other marketing channels. Let's start with Anthony. What are you doing at your company, as well as what you're seeing within the industry in regards to this?
Well, for us, we are we start as a brick-and-mortar outfit. So what's most important to us is that we have to start with getting people onto our social media sites. So it's really important for us is to really evaluate all the customer touch points, whether it's direct mail or email, freestanding inserts, TV, or radio. Job one is to make people aware. So sort of different than people who are only selling on the Internet, we have a lot of opportunity to talk to people at the ground level. And so what's important to us is that we're always thinking about, are we telling the story that we are available socially, we're involved in social networks, and that we're driving and trying to have people have conversations on our social network. So big piece is to make sure that every piece of customer-facing material is doing that, which is some people sort of think, well, that's a no-duh, you know, obviously that you should do that. But you'd be surprised how many people exclude that communication. And although people are used to being on Facebook as a probably the primary social piece, they may not be thinking of you being on, you know, on Facebook or having a Twitter or Foursquare. So, you know, when we have our location, we make sure that people know that we're on Foursquare and we have Facebook and we have Twitter. And throughout our stores, there's QR codes you can scan if you want to check in, or scan if you want to tag yourself at a location. So for a place like us, who it's important to really drive brick and mortar sales, and I think a lot of people in the industry are trying to find ways to let people know about the social aspect and then also drive them to the stores and identify that they're at a store or doing something within your location.
John, do you have anything that you want to add on that?
Sure. Thanks, Joe, and thanks, Anthony. I think for us, Joss & Main is as you mentioned. I mean, we are e-commerce only, and just to share a couple of pictures. The whole fundamental model for us is social, so we don't think of social as a separate channel. Fundamentally, what we're asking our consumers to do is to get inspired about items that they can only get for 72 hours. And the ideal interaction for us is that someone shares. And so basically the way in which we talk to our consumers is always about sharing the Joss, about finding the item that they love and, you know, hopefully buying it first, but if they don't buy, sharing it with their network. And we have many users who, at least once a week, are sharing something that they adore. And so, you know, the audience won't be able to read this, but what you get is these long conversations about items on Facebook. And the whole model in flash sales is that there's an urgency that's driven by the fact that items are going to disappear. They're going to go out of stock. They're no longer going to be available. And that, you know, we've surrounded them with lush editorial content, which, you know, creates some of the excitement in the theater that has, you know, always existed in brick and mortar retail, which, you know, has largely been, you know, missing from a lot of e-commerce models up until now. So, you know, when we go about thinking about how we're going to, you know, do member acquisition or how we're going to market, we don't, you know, think about how we're going to integrate social. We start with social, and we don't think of social necessarily as the platform, meaning is it Facebook, is it Twitter, is it Foursquare, you know, is it one of the other technical platforms. We think about the sociological motivations for why someone is sharing, the reciprocity, the validation, and the financial incentives that are that we put in place to share, and that's primary. And then we think about, you know, the technical means that our consumers are going to use to share, and that's what we really believe drives is driven our very rapid success. So, you know, it's more of a matter for us in many ways of integrating other channels with social than the other way around.
Great. You hear a lot in the retail industry about brands and how they're using social media to entice fans via promotions, sweepstakes, contests, those types of events. John, can you talk about that area and how that relates to the Joss & Main brand?
Sure. So we certainly, you know, focus on social as one of the two primary channels that we have for how we're delivering our promotions. So again, you know, we're a private site. You know, you come to our site and you don't see product on the front page. You see a login page, and you know, you have to join our mailing list. We're going to email you, you know, seven times a week, if not more, and with content. And that, you know, our marketing messages are, you know, are fundamentally they are content, right? So, you know, we kind of think of ourselves as putting out a daily magazine, you know, once a day, that you know, should be inspiring to our consumers and how they're going to how they can use it. So when we think about, you know, promotions, ideally, you know, what we want to do is we want to seed those promotions first with our heaviest heaviest customers and get them to share, get them to feel that sense of insider touch on an exclusive offering, and then we'll go out to our next tier of customers, and then, you know, we'll you know, perhaps be working with a major publication, a major influencer, in the you know, one of the key shelter magazines, and they'll, you know, open it up to a broader audience. But again, you know, the key means of entry for many of our promotions and sweepstakes is on Facebook or on Twitter, because fundamentally we're trying to, you know, it's how we're trying to engage our audience, and, you know, the platform that we use isn't nearly as important as the fact that we're trying to engender this this sense of buzz. And, you know, for us, you know, we actually have customers call us all the time and say, oh, I got a phone call from a friend about this item. You know, for us, that's just as good of a, you know, of a social mention as a, you know, Facebook like or anything else. What we want to do is create that environment. So we have weekly giveaways of items that, you know, we do on Facebook. And, you know, certainly we'll do, you know, a flash event, which hasn't previously been announced, and will announce it on Twitter. And it'll be with some very desirable items that can only be purchased for a very short window of time. We're not, you know, we're not going to even email our list, right? We might be working with a brand that wants to remain very private about their involvement. And so for people who, you know, get that Twitter and they're on, you know, between, you know, 6 and 8 p.m. Eastern Standard, when that that brand is available at a significant discount, you know, they have, you know, they've gained access to something, and, you know, they've gained access to, they've gained access to a deal that they're, you know, fabulously excited about. But they've also, I felt as though we've, you know, shared something with them. And again, you know, I use the word share in the broader sociological sense. So it doesn't, you know, the platform is really much less important to us than the sense that we want our users to shop socially.
Great. How about for working gear, Anthony? How does this relate to your company?
Well, it's interesting compared to John and his company is that, you know, we aren't private. We're totally public, and our model is totally different. So it's a very interesting juxtaposition about how they do things and how we do things. And sort of contrasting to the private nature of their model, Joss and Main, is that, you know, we are very public. So I think one of the obstacles when you do sweepstakes or promotions, there is a general sense that people don't win them. You know, and when you enter a promotion or you do a sweepstakes or anything like that, you never know, unless you are the winner, who won. So a great piece of using social and is that you can announce and you can kind of publicly have the contest happen and unravel in front of people and that at the same time drives content and conversation. So it's a really positive place to do something. I'm sure a lot of people are listening have done sweepstakes and contests and probably have had that same pushback where, you know, you come up with a great idea and you say people could enter and win and so on and so forth. But there's a general sort of people have heard that a lot and they don't feel that people win. And I think that's pretty common. So a great place to have promotions and sweepstakes and contests is online because people on social media because people get to see it validated. I think that's really important. The flip side, and we've had some really great luck with it, is having contests where perhaps you submit an image. In our case, you know, we're a workwear brand, so work boots are important. So, you know, and we sell kind of a little bit of a higher-end boot, you know, and we have boot trade events. So we kind of have people, you know, send us your most rugged or beat-up boot, and, you know, we will give away stuff for that. And there's a couple pieces that work there. You know, you're having the consumer drive content on your social media site, and it's giving people something to look at, to comment on, and continue to validate what's going on there. I will say that if you're using Facebook, for all people who are listening, it has some strict rules about promotion and sweepstakes and contests. And although, depending on your company, you may or may not have done them and been burned by it, it's important to pay attention to those rules because they will come down on you if you don't sort of adhering to the rules of how you're supposed to enter or not enter or have a sweepstakes or a contest on Facebook. So it's sort of a bit of a cautionary tale. It's very effective. It's a great way to drive content. It's a great way to drive validation that people really feel like people win or get stuff from your company. But I will say it's really important for a person who's looking into doing something on, particularly Facebook. The rules are pretty strict. And I don't know, John, if you've run into that. But that's definitely a concern for us to make sure that we're compliant with the Facebook, in particular, rules of contests and sweepstakes.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right, and the rules are set up such that there's not a lot of gray area and room for interpretation. So, you know, we early on learned and have very consistently just followed what they allow to do. But there's still a lot of latitude for creativity and social campaigns we've found. So, but I agree. I think it behooves anybody who's listening to get very well versed in how what the strictures are before you go whole hog into this.
Yeah, I feel like I've had some great creative ideas from our team here at Working Gear, and you know, they seem like you know, that's a perfect social idea. It's definitely going to work, and you know, then you kind of look at sort of the ins and outs of the promotional rules and sort of realize that that's not going to happen, and it's such a great idea. No one's done it because you can't do it. You're not allowed to. So definitely, you know, I definitely have people make sure they're clear on those rules.
Sort of the next step then, or at least one of certainly the hot trends in the retail industry is e-commerce and selling your goods on Facebook. Let's get into a little bit of a discussion about whether or not that's the right move for a brand, what considerations you need to take into account, and sort of the whole discussion around the value of selling on Facebook. Anthony, how about you get started on this one?
Yeah, so for us, since we do, since Working Gear has brick and mortar locations as well as internet e-com site, and also one of our other endeavors is that we work with Sears Holding Company. We opened healthcare apparel stores in their stores in their locations, shops in shops. We have to look at where does our revenue come into? Where do we want the customer to go? So, you know, first and foremost, the healthcare and workwear apparel is touch and feel, fit type of situation. So we know that ultimately the lion's share of our revenue is going to come from the store. And then after that, we do a steady business on the web. So when we're considering where else we want to sell, we have to think about, do we really want to sell there? Does that dilute the spaces where we want to send the customer? Does that confuse the situation, you know? And when you're trying to communicate, how are we trying to funnel the customer's decision-making to make their purchase? So for us as a company currently, Facebook or having an additional place to sell sort of dilutes the message and confuses the situation. So do we look at Facebook as a place to make or to do commerce? No, because we want them to either go to a location, speak with a sales associate, perhaps buy more, take advantage of stuff that's going on in the store, or to do it online. So we see definitely as a place, Facebook as a place to have a conversation and to direct to a store or to the e-com site, but not to have actual commerce happen there, because I think it really, I don't necessarily know if the word confuses, but it makes it harder for us to drive the customer to where we want them to be. So we don't look at it as a place for commerce. Now, as things develop, will that change in 5 years? I don't know. But as where we sit right now, we have sort of some goals here, and we think that the best place to do an e-commerce is either in our stores or on our e-com site currently.
How about you, John? How about for the Joss & Main brand? What's your feeling on this?
So, again, I think the key difference for us, we're very different brands, but for us the difference is that we're private, and fundamentally, while we can create an environment where someone's create an environment where someone's login that shows that they're a member of Joss & Main is tied to the Facebook login to an app. Essentially, it feels duplicative for us. And since what we're trying to do is create a really rich environment with incentive for consumers to log on every day at 11 a.m. And we have plenty of consumers who tell us that they book on their calendar 15 minutes or 30 minutes at 11 a.m. every morning, so they can log in and shop Joss & Main. We're trying to drive to that destination. And while a Facebook commerce site is very attractive for a huge host of reasons, it doesn't foster the same level of engagement. Again, for us, it's the online destination instead of the brick and mortar destination. But for us, there are other channels which we control, which deliver that much better. Now, again, looking forward a few years, I'm not gonna rule it out by any stretch of the imagination. But it's something that up until now, we have all we can do to provide enough inventory to handle the demand we have to add another channel that we don't control as much doesn't feel like the right move.
Okay. Obviously, with all marketing efforts, companies want to measure the return on investment they're getting. Social media being no different. Let's take a look and have a discussion around measuring the ROI of your social efforts. John, you want to start on this and how you guys go about this at Joss & Main?
Sure. I mean, for us, it's fairly easy as a pure e-commerce player in the sense that we look at individual members who were acquired through social channels, and we look at it whether they were what types of events they were that brought them in. One of our key social channels is actually not on one of the social platforms, but is really sharing an invitation to this private event space, which is done directly on our site. Again, it's we're completely agnostic about whether someone uses email or Facebook or Twitter any other platform to share, whether they, you know, they post on their blog. For us, the sharing is the more important part. So we're able to track individual members and cohorts over time and understand how that sharing is driving value. And fundamentally, one of the key ways in which we think about the value of a consumer is how much they are sharing and how likely the folks with whom they've shared are to join, and how likely the folks who've joined are to purchase. And so we target people fundamentally based on how likely we believe they are to engage in those behaviors. And then on an ongoing basis, we encourage our members to share items that they love. And, as we're able to create unique unique URLs to track how those are affecting other members joining or coming in and purchasing. And the way we think about it is that that's only the tip of the iceberg. We know that there is more word-of-mouth sharing that's going on, more sharing that we can't track, more sharing that happens when someone doesn't use a unique URL. But fundamentally, that is exactly how we measure all of our marketing efforts. And in many ways, while we're certainly interested in transactionally how well those new marketing promotions work, we look at sharing as a as in many ways the key primary indicator of how well financially something is going to perform, and the correlation is pretty ironclad.
Anthony, how do you guys tackle this at Working Gear?
This is sort of a situation where it's a little less ironclad because we're dealing with physical locations, but many of probably the metrics that John uses are at least indicators of what's successful online. As far as we do look at inbound traffic from our Facebook page, to our e-com site as an important piece. But looking sort of what John was saying is just taking a look at how much people are sharing. So when we're doing an event or promotion, how much is that shared? How often is that shared? How many impressions are we getting from that? How many new likes we're getting from that? And it's important, I think, to sort of as a company to understand that the people that are going onto the page and liking and sharing are the hand raisers that are most likely going to promote your brand. So we keep a close eye on how that conversation is evolving and continuing. So in a more solid sense, we do events where people can download promotions from the Facebook page and bring them into the store. So we have a great way of, and they have unique barcodes that we can sort of track that. So that's pretty solid. But we don't look at that as the only indicator. I think if you look at that by itself, that's not enough. So it's sort of a combination of looking at when we do promotions, who's downloading them, where are they going, what stores are they interested in. We can do geo-targeted type stuff. Are we getting more lift in the stores that we geo-targeted a promotion socially versus the control stores? And then ultimately the conversation, the likes, the impressions, and then followed up by actual inbound traffic to our e-com site. For a brick-and-mortar retailer, it's definitely important to know that there are many factors that are here that are important to look at instead of sort of, zoning in on one piece. Sometimes people kind of get hung up on the amount of impressions or are they getting, are they getting enough inbound traffic from their social media efforts to justify doing social media. And I think if you look at it too lasered in, as far as from brick and mortar, you're probably missing the complete picture. So we try to be as open and looking at as many metrics as possible to kind of measure everything.
Okay. So I guess the next step in that and the next piece would be once you identify an ROI to the channel, is your brands are going to want to then go out and acquire more, whether it's Facebook fans, Twitter followers, YouTube viewers. Anthony, why don't we start with you at Working Gear? Do you have any strategies or tips that you can give to the audience on, acquiring more fans and followers and just social media advocates for your brand?
Yeah, well, I think we kind of almost already covered some of them as far as acquiring is, you know, when we're talking about integrating with your other marketing channels, you know, if you're doing TV, radio, inserts, emails, you have to make sure that people are aware there, you know, make sure people are aware that you're in the social space to start people sort of coming onto your site and becoming friends with you or following your Twitter feed. And then sort of we're talking about the social and the media contests. Those are great because, you know, if people are winning or being involved in contests or entering contests, you know, ultimately they're sharing that information. They're participating and they're sharing with their friends. So they're driving and creating content, and that kind of just keeps snowballing. And when you look at those contests and those, that information kind of going to your site, we've found that the user content can often drive more likes and growth to your Facebook site than anything. So finding ways to stimulate your current base, so whatever you are at currently, to share, whether it's contests or promotions, or asking them, in our case, you know, send in a pair, you know, show us your most beat-up boots or tell us a story about working at your hospital. Taking advantage of your current base and encouraging them to participate is probably the best way to drive more likes once you're actually, you know, got some type of critical mass of a decent amount of followers, whether it's on Facebook. And I'm concentrating on Facebook because that's, I think, the strongest social platform, but same thing with Twitter. So taking advantage of the current people that are there, encouraging them to drive content, encouraging a conversation, letting them talk, and giving them something to talk about, whether it be contests or promotions or asking a question that's relevant to them, that is a conversation that is what social media is meant to be for in the first place. And the more you do that, the more you're going to get people driven to your site and acquire more fans, Twitter or Facebook. So it's interesting if you try to make social media what it's not, and you probably won't get out what you need. But if you are social, and you'll acquire more fans, or at least that's what we've found.
How about you, John, at Jaws of Maine? What have your experiences been around this?
So I think, you know, for us, really, you know, again, I'll go back to this concept that for us, our content, and we have lots and lots of user generated content. We, you know, as Anthony said, we encourage people to send in, you know, pictures of their homes to ask for advice, or when they, you know, get a great find on Jostling, we encourage them to post a picture of you know, where it's found a place in their home. But really, you know, our you know, we have you know, between 5 and 7 new events every day, and each one of those events has got, you know, what I'd describe as magazine-like content around it. And so, you know, by doing that and by encouraging people to say, oh my gosh, did you see the thing? You know, there's this amazing, you know, pick your favorite cookware brand or pick your, you know, your favorite designer on Jobs in Maine today. We're just providing people with a constant stream of stuff to share. So, you know, the same way that people share, you know, a magazine article that they might like, you know, this our core audience is really in the business of finds. And actually, the most powerful thing is actually not what we have in stock, but rather what we have that is out of stock. And, you know, an ideal sale for us, one that generates Facebook and Twitter followers, is one like the following that you're seeing now, where, you know, within 20 minutes of going up, we've sold out of everything in the sale. And there's a couple of items left, but they're already in someone's cart, and so they can't be had. And that's what generates the buzz. So, you know, then we get called, you know, I won't describe them as angry, but we get, you know, excited, anticipatory calls from people into customer service saying, oh my gosh, how come you didn't, you know, you didn't warn me. I'm a loyal member. How come you didn't, you know, you didn't warn me that, you know, my favorite brand of cookware was going up on your site this morning? So, well, actually, we would have if you'd been on Facebook. We, you know, let you guys know the day before. And so that's the kind of thing that, you know, that gets people. I mean, you know, we sort of turn on its head the idea that the perfect customer is a satisfied customer. In a sense, our perfect customer is a a very satisfied customer when they buy, but a customer who's also occasionally disappointed that they missed this great opportunity. And that buzz and excitement is exactly the kind of thing that, if you think about, your non-virtual life, that all of us share every day. And so driving, out of stock, highly desirable sales is a great way for us to generate fans. It's not going to work for everybody like that, but I would, encourage us as e-marketers to go back to the fundamentals of, if you think about your own shopping behavior, in the categories you serve, what is it that you tell your friends about? What did you, what did you miss out on, or what did you find? And then how do you translate that into something which you can use the social platforms to transmit?
The selling on Facebook has certainly generated a lot of buzz. But I hear, and a lot of retailers will say that the channel is best as a customer service tool. John, do you want to talk a little bit about social media and its role as a customer service tool, specifically at Joss & Main, or also kind of just as in the retail industry as a whole?
Sure. So for us, I think it's we actually, we take customer service very seriously, and we, many of our categories are just tough to service online. And I'm not going to, pretend that when you're shipping items like sofas and chandeliers and glass vases that there aren't problems. There are. And I think that what we at Wayfair and certainly at Joss & Main do is that we're very, very good at fixing problems. So in a sense, we welcome complaints or concerns or questions on Facebook and on Twitter, because it gives us a chance to show off how rapidly we come back. If our customers are asking about the dimensions, and we have the chance to be there in 5 minutes, there are others who are watching the conversation, and it gives you a chance to publicly represent your customer service. I don't think it's actually that great a customer service experience to ask a question on Facebook, certainly versus the phone as a channel. But for us, it's a terrific opportunity to profile what we do and to actually use the tonality and voice in an actual conversation that's about something. So we embrace it as sort of as a marketing tool for how good our service is. I think that the vast majority of our interactions are still via other channels, but we disproportionately value the opportunities we have to swarm on and delight a consumer who has a question or has an issue on Facebook.
How about you, for you, Anthony, at Working Gear, the role of social media as customer service tool?
I think this is definitely a spot where John and I, even though our business models are completely different, that the way we treat social media is almost exactly the same. I totally agree that it is not the best customer service experience, but there's kind of goes back to that sense of when you satisfy a customer on the phone and give them a really good customer service experience, you're treating one person. But conversely, when you do it in public on a social media site in front of all this person's friends and all the people who are like your site or your social media page, you've just sort of shown everybody how good you are. So what John was saying is it's a marketing piece. It certainly is. And this actually goes back to it seems logical, but not a lot of companies who are getting into social media understand this, is that you need to make sure that you're if you're in the space, you have to be well manned. I've no doubt that Joss & Main is probably has a whole bunch of people there available and looking at their sites all the time. But we here at Working Gear, with our 100 or so stores, we were really focused on our brick and mortar experience. So when we started to get into the social media, which was relatively recently, we had to make sure we had a dedicated staff ready to have that conversation. So the first step is, if depending on where you are in the cycle of social media and treating and how that integrates with your store, make sure you're ready to have a customer service experience. And if you are there to answer a question immediately and you do it well, it's in front of an audience. So it is a marketing tool. I think that's kind of a really good way to look at it, and it isn't the best place to satisfy your needs. Getting on the phone, talking directly to a store, going into a store, talking to all your customer service people is ultimately the best. But if you can address it quickly and address it well, and have that tone be confident and really solve problems. It drives content, it drives up views of your site, and it drives up the profile of what you do. So I see it as a really, really great tool to serve the customer, but ultimately also to kind of show off that you do what you do well. And I think, you know, people have that sense that, you know, oh, I can't get through on customer service. You know, I think that's an old line. I called and I was on hold for a zillion years, whatever. Well, strangely enough, if you post something on the Facebook page and someone gets back to you 10 minutes later, they're very excited, which they would not be to feel the same way if they were on the phone. But they're happy if you do it that way. So it's a very strange situation. But, yeah, if you left somebody 10 minutes on hold, they'd be very upset. If you get back to them 10 minutes later on Facebook, you've just, you know, solved all that person's problems and everyone's impressed. So so I guess, that's the best way to deal with it.
Great. Well, we've talked a lot about social media we've talked a lot about Facebook specifically. How about social media platforms other than Facebook and maybe Twitter to a lesser extent that your companies find value in? Anthony, how about you start on this one?
Well, so I think the first one that I'm at least most interested in is Foursquare and those types of social media which are more physical, you know, checking into a location, sort of making it, taking it off of the computer and putting it into your store as a physical location. And that's the nature of our business because we have so many locations. I think, you know, no one has, when it comes to a Foursquare type app, no one has sort of won the battle of that yet. And there's not a lot of adopters yet. So, we have our eyes on things like Foursquare, where people can check in, can get deals, and sort of really make it more physical, take advantage of the location aspect of it. But what we're just trying to do at our stores, and then also in conjunction with Sears, is figure out which one is going to be the leader, which one's the one to back, which one's the one that you can take advantage of when you're not in front of your computer, but when you're sitting in a store, you're at a mall, and you're going to be on your phone. How are you going to use a person's mobile device to drive you to a physical location? So I like Foursquare. I think a lot of people are familiar with Foursquare. Adoption is definitely an issue for sure. I know that Facebook is doing a good job kind of starting to work in check-ins. And I think, you know, everybody's still got the buzz about what Google Plus is going to be, what does it mean to the whole space, how important is it to be involved there. I know right now it's not really business friendly. It's real more about personal interaction right now, but as that develops, will it overtake something like Facebook, and will its functions be better than Facebook? I'm not sure, but, you know, we're definitely keeping an eye on that. Twitter we use, and I think that's great for flash sales. But, again, I think location-based stuff is the stuff that we're looking at most of all. So I would say Foursquare is the one that we're kind of just sort of keeping our eye on and trying to see if we can get that to a place. I think ultimately adoption of that social media is the issue. Is how you need to get to a point. You know, Facebook has 750 million users, and I think Foursquare has something like 3 or 4. It's just a matter of catch up.
How about for you, John, at Jasmine? What's your take on this?
So, I think for us, the key thing is that we're platform agnostic, and really, we try to own the concept of sharing, and I don't much. Worry about how one of our users does it. We aim for users who are social, and so, you know, we create these unique URLs all over the place that people can use to share, and we hook up, whatever platforms our user base is using. So far Google Plus, for instance, hasn't reached that critical mass. I mean, I think, you know, for us, I hate to be a contrarian, but the two most critical social platforms above all else are email and blogs. And that's where the mass of communication is still happening. We see an enormous number of people forwarding our daily marketing emails, and we receive responses to our marketing emails saying, I'm so delighted about this event that you put on today, or you know, that was really inspiring. Even if someone doesn't buy from that particular event, that's the kind of relationship we're trying to engender. So, you know, I wish I could say, certainly for us, location based isn't so critical, except you know when we're doing public relations events. But the fact of the matter is that we don't feel as though we need to be that far ahead of the curve in terms of saying do we have a Google Plus One widget incorporated or not? When we start hearing requests for it, we'll put it in. It's really not it's really not an issue of what's technically feasible. It's more a matter of just ensuring that we allow our users easy access to whatever platforms it is that they're using to share. But even though we're fundamentally about sharing, we don't feel like we need to get ahead and force our consumers to engage in cutting edge behavior. We'll allow them to share wherever it is that they want. And frankly, to be really contrarian, I think that word of mouth is our most powerful social platform. So that's the ultimate litmus test for us. If we've created a successful event, do we hear back that we've created something that has been shared by word of mouth or a phone call? That's where we want to be, and everything else is just a substitute for that. So we certainly have a whole staff of people here who are focused on figuring out what the next wave is, but there's nothing that we're going to reach ahead to, and nor do we feel like we need to.
Great. Well, I think we're just almost up out of time here, but I think we've had a great discussion on the evolving role of social media in the retail industry. So I'd like to just take this opportunity to thank Anthony and John for their time. And also on behalf of Retail Online Integration Magazine, I want to thank you again for attending this session. If you're interested in discussing anything that you heard during this presentation, we encourage you to visit the Networking Lounge to chat live with other session attendees. You can also visit the info booth to fill out our show survey to let us know about your experience today. Please also check out the agenda for the rest of the day today. We have several wonderful sessions lined up and encourage you to view as many as you can. Remember, if you can't catch them live, add them to your briefcase and view at your convenience in the on-demand environment. Have a great afternoon, everyone.